It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we look at the potential for an official digital U.S. dollar. The idea is being considered by the Federal Reserve. First, President Joe Biden's first year in office ended last week with what political watchers say are a mix of successes and failures. The Biden administration made vaccinations against COVID-19 available to all Americans, but some have hesitated or refused to get vaccinated. And with the Omicron variant surging, Americans are struggling with access to testing and hospitals are overwhelmed again. On the economy, the unemployment rate has gone down from pandemic highs and wages have risen for lower paid workers. But employers are struggling to find people to fill open jobs, and rising prices are eating into workers' paychecks. We're taking a closer look at Biden's first year in office, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the job President Biden has done so far? Big picture or on particular issues, including his handling of the pandemic or the U.S. economy? What do you want to see him focus on for the rest of his first term? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Alisa Von Hagel is professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Alisa, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here this afternoon.
Let's start digging into some of the issues. The last year of the Trump administration, the first year of the Biden administration, the big story, of course, the pandemic. How do you start to unpack all the things that have been going on over this last year?
Well, I think when thinking about Biden's first year, I mean, it's, you know, every president's first year is, you know, unique in different ways. But this truly has been a incredibly unique time in our nation's history, as well as Biden's administration. And there's been a transformation writ large for this new administration with respect to how issues are addressed, the tenor, you know, that has taken the people who are in the White House. And so there's really been just a significant transition, and we've seen a significant change in the approach to COVID, the pandemic specifically, as well as COVID relief.
In late December, President Biden made a speech about the spread of Omicron. Now, back in July, around July 4th, he kind of declared independence from COVID. Then along came Delta, then Omicron. Here's a listen to the president late last year.
So are we going back to March 2020? Not this last March 2021, but March 2020, when the pandemic first hit. That's what I keep getting asked. The answer is absolutely no, no.
Referring in part to shutdowns, school closings, I think that sort of thing. Did President Biden over-promise back in the summer, saying that we're kind of past this thing? Has that caused problems for him now?
I believe so. I mean, COVID is obviously still with us, and it seems like it will be with us for quite some time now. That we still have, you know, great uncertainty with respect to that, of course. There has been, as you mentioned, significant success in the number of Americans vaccinated. And so we are in a different place than we are in March 2020. But yet we still seem to be having a significant proportion of the nation's eligible participants not getting vaccinated, which has led to, rates of hospitalizations and cases in general to increase, I think, to the highest rates that they've ever been.
Logistics-wise, the vaccination rollout happened, went pretty well for the most part. Testing now, there's been criticism of the federal government, the Biden administration, that, hey, we've got this surge again. We've had all this time to prepare, and we don't seem to have the tests that people are hoping to find. How much of that rests on the Biden administration?
There's such a huge, the pandemic relief is involving many agencies, many departments. And so it's not solely the problem of the Biden administration. However, he is, as the nation's president, you know, going to be taking the heat from it. And with respect to the testing shortages, and specifically, I think that there's been such a focus and such a push for vaccinations that testing seemed to have sort of been left out, essentially. And so we see that with the rising Omicron variant and just how it's spreading so voraciously throughout the country that, the lack of testing is truly concerning for people going back to work, kids going to school, you know, people ensuring that they can, you know, meet with you know, family members, grandparents, and that sort of thing.
Talking to Lisa von Hagel, professor of political science at UW-Superior. Looking back at the first year of the Biden administration, you could join in with your thoughts, big picture or on particular issues. How did the Biden administration do in its first year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. John is with us in Elkhorn. John, hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What do you want to bring up, John?
Well, let's start with the thing that really was interesting about the last election. I believe almost 170 million people voted. I mean, that's a story that in itself is quite significant. But for me, Joe Biden kept his promise the moment that he was sworn in. I know that a lot of people are going to try to bring up the promises made and all this other stuff. The reality is, for me, that Joe Biden was not Donald Trump. Joe Biden was not somebody that was going to go around and say things like the election was stolen and convince other Republicans somehow to join in this. I think the story is that he's not Donald Trump. And I think for a lot of people, if they really examine their conscience, if they said, okay, this is how the country is right now, but would I still want Donald Trump to be in there? The answer would be no. A lot of people voted not for a promise, but to get rid of Donald Trump.
John, thanks for the call. Alisa, much was made of the contrast between Biden and Trump, and just in terms of their temperaments, their keel, I guess, if you will, the stability that they bring, and that's what John is focusing on here.
Absolutely, and I would agree with the caller in that for millions of Americans, it's just more stable. It's quieter. There's not these, you know, scandals every single day on the nightly news about, you know, large, you know, global issues, but also just domestic things, or, you know, all of these mix-ups and problems in the administration more generally. So, I mean, there just isn't just a different tenor. There's, again, different people. There's mainstream public servants in these executive administrations that have been there before. And so it's more even keeled, you know, the administration as a whole, as well as President Biden. And for absolutely, I think many, many Americans were just wanting to go to a place of, you know, quiet or stability after the 4 years of the Trump administration.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Presidents are, of course, often evaluated on the economic performance of the country. Sometimes people say they get too much credit when things go well, too much blame when things go badly. When I talk to economists, Alisa, there's a lot of, on the one hand, on the other hand, going on with the U.S. economy. What do you look at when evaluating the economy under the Biden administration so far?
Well, I guess you stole my thunder there.
Sorry.
So,
yeah.
So on the one hand, there's been great achievements in reducing the unemployment rate. And workers have greater wages have raised. They have greater recourse to get better benefits. So in that respect, workers are, you know, have more rights essentially, or are getting a better deal. But then again, on the other hand, we have been dealing with the highest inflation rate that we have had in the past 40 years of our nation's history, which absolutely affects people, you know, at the end of the day, with respect to whether it's food prices, gas, anything whatsoever. It's definitely going to impact the everyday consumer. And it is now, and actually inflation is now been ranked as the number one issue for Americans. The first time COVID has not been number one since the pandemic hit.
Bring on another caller now. Mike is with us in New London. Mike, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having this show. Love you guys. First of all, my main tenet is Biden is doing a great job. He has done a great job on the economy, on COVID, on foreign affairs, as far as I'm concerned. The things that are hurting him, the spin, you can take the same facts and then throw in misinformation from the hate right-wing talk shows and such. They show the downside of everything. Couple that with obstructionism by the GOP, obviously, everybody, coupled with two in his own party. So I think he's doing a great job.
Mike, thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. There are concerns about misinformation and spin, Elisa, but as we were just saying, there are some real downsides over the last year, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I guess I do agree with the call. And I think when, you know, thinking of the kind of the quote unquote failures of the previous year of the Biden administration, I think, you know, number one, whether it's events controlled by him or that he cannot control, is simply the, you know, polarization in this nation, whether it's in the general public and the, you know, the false information that is coming up on certain websites, on the internet, or whether it's polarization in Congress. And so, I mean, I think that, you know, again, is largely out of the control of the presidency, but it is certainly has, you know, led to some of these, you know, failures of the administration. Again, whether or not that's necessarily deserved is another, you know, debate altogether. But certainly, you know, whether it's the mixed information on, you know, the vaccine, COVID in general, or other political issues more generally, I mean, it's something that we're, you know, still attempting to deal with, and hopefully will, you know, someday we will be able to, you know, tamp down on the worst effects of that.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Elisa Van Hagel, professor of political science at UW-Superior, with us today to talk about President Biden's first year in office. And we want to hear your thoughts on that topic at 800-642-1234. What are the high points, the low points, maybe one of each that you saw over the president's first year in office? Do you think the country has changed for better, worse, or not at all? How about your own personal economy and well-being? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our review of President Biden's first year in office. Elisa Van Hagel stays with us from UW-Superior. Here's candidate Joe Biden speaking during the presidential campaign in September of 2020.
You know, as a nation, we face one of the most difficult moments in our history, in my view. Four historic crises all at the same time. The worst pandemic in 100 years. That's already killed nearly 200,000 people and counting. The worst economic crisis since the Great Depression has cost tens of millions of American jobs and counting. Emboldened white supremacy unseen since the 60s and a reckoning on race that's long overdue. And undeniable acceleration of the punishing reality of climate change on our planet and our people, on the lives and livelihoods, which I'd like to talk about now.
How do you think the president has done on those or other issues? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Brett is with us in Reedsburg. Brett, hi.
Hey, I just wanted to call and bring up a kind of a point of contrast mm-hmm. for all of Trump's failings, which there were very many. One thing that he did was present a front of strength to the world that I think we're witnessing right now with Russia and their aggression towards Ukraine and how they are trying to take advantage of us. And I don't think that happened under Trump. And I don't think that that's given nearly enough credit. I was wondering if your guest could speak to that.
Brett, thanks a lot for the call. Elise, he takes it to foreign policy. What do you think of what Brett had to say?
I mean, with respect to foreign policy, I think when we think of the Biden administration more generally, scholars, pundits seem to point to a return to normalcy, to mending frayed relations with global alliances. We've rejoined the Paris Climate Treaty, have reinforced, you know, NATO and our commitments to it, rejoined the WHO. And so I think in many respects, there's been a much greater commitment to these international organizations that countries around the world have responded to positively. Certainly there is, you know, whether or not, you know, this type of aggression against Ukraine would have not occurred under the Trump administration is, you know, we simply can never know. But certainly we know that the Biden administration is currently still today negotiating with Russian foreign ministers in trying to prevent you know, an escalation into war in that region of the world.
Thanks for the call, Brett. Another foreign policy concern, Elisa, was the withdrawal from Afghanistan. The withdrawal policy had pretty strong support in polls anyway, and from former President Trump. The handling of it got a lot of criticism and is seen as one of a couple things in turning points on polling and approval ratings for the president.
Absolutely. So from the beginning of his administration up through August, he had approval over a majority of Americans approved of Joe Biden's job in the White House thus far. And then we had the Afghanistan withdrawal, which was always going to be difficult, was always going to be messy, I suppose. We've been in nation for 22 years. And so despite, you know, a number of presidents speaking of, you know, getting the U.S. out of Afghanistan, it finally did occur under the Biden administration, which, you know, people on the right and the left weren't supportive. However, as you mentioned, the actual, you know, withdrawal itself was, you know, was a basically a strategic and intelligence failure in many respects. There's, you know, and then with the Taliban resurgence and the, you know, basic humanitarian disaster that's occurring at this, you know, at this point in the game, it has been a turning point with respect to, you know, how the nation views Joe Biden as president, but also with respect to this particular crisis as well.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Sharon in Door County. Sharon, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My comment has to do with what President Biden has done in regards to addressing poverty in our country, and in particular, children in poverty. I think it has been far too many years since we have had any politicians in Washington acknowledging that we have far too many children living in poverty. And I think President Biden has not only made an extreme effort to help their children, but also families who are living in poverty, and families who are, quite frankly, middle-class families, with the child tax credits that he has introduced. So I think in that respect, I am very proud to see a president looking out for all of our citizens and not just.
I gotcha, Sharon. Thanks for calling in. A lot of the policies she talked about came in that first COVID relief package from early last year, Elisa.
Yes, absolutely. As your caller mentioned, there's the president has, you know, in his speeches or in his tone, has greatly emphasized his, you know, concern for, you know, those impoverished, those who are, you know, as she said, even middle class, but families that are struggling in this country today. I mean, we we're all struggling in different ways because of different reasons, but there is, you know, much more of an emphasis on, you know, providing for, in different ways, for these different particular struggles. And as she mentioned, the child care tax credit was expanded. The COVID tax, the stimulus package also included funding for schools, as well as for vaccine distribution, for unemployment, you know, continued unemployment insurance benefits. And so that first COVID relief package really did, reach number of different issue areas, and didn't just focus specifically on, say, vaccine distribution, but was about, you know, dealing with the everyday struggles of families in the country today.
Thanks for the call. Dan joins us next in Franksville. Dan, hello.
Yeah, I'm not too happy with Biden, but I don't think he has much control over anything. The Federal Reserve basically runs the economy. You know, not Joe Biden, but the Federal Reserve is not a part of the government, so they just have their own people there, and they can raise rates or lower them, and that has everything to do with the economy. All these thoughts are nice where people say Joe Biden is spending money on this and that. That's all on a credit card. The $670-some billion they just spent on the military, that's all on a credit card. That means the adults that are saying that, they're saying the hell with our children.
Gotcha, Dan. Gave us a lot to work with there. First of all, the Federal Reserve, obviously influential on the economy. The president does appoint, though, the people who run the reserve, but it's kind of a hands-off situation in some other ways.
Absolutely. And I think I agree with your caller in that, you know, with respect to, thinking of the successes or failures of a presidency, you know, oftentimes the things that we attribute to a presidential administration are simply completely, utterly out of the control or, you know, the effect of the president. But again, he is that figurehead that we, you know, I guess assign blame or, you know, attribute to these successes. And so when it's, when it comes to the economy, I believe you mentioned this previously that, you know, we, when there is, you know, failure of the economy, that we put, we in place undue effort or emphasis on the role of the president in this. And so again, largely the failures or the problems with the economy today are fairly outside the control of the president himself. Certainly there are different ways in which he could, you know, attempt to work to, you know, change things here and there. But again, he's only be able to work with the, you know, in the ways that the Constitution basically allows him to, which doesn't give him a lot of leeway specifically with respect to the economy.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Just a few moments left. Alisa, what are you watching for in 2022 as we continue to evaluate the current administration?
Well, I'm already turning my eyes to the next election. I think it'll be interesting to see how the, you know, all of these different issues that have been raised today will affect both turnout as well as, you know, the way people vote for the upcoming midterm elections. We know that in virtually almost every midterm election, the president's party loses seats or loses the one or both chambers of the legislature. And so, you know, whether to the extent that there is, you know, this unpopular or this declining popularity with the president is attributed to Congress and thus leads to a turnover is unknown, of course, but certainly there's just early speculation already right now. And that's, I think, thinking about how all of these things will shape how people vote in the upcoming midterm elections.
Alisa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Alisa von Hagel, professor of political science at UW-Superior, with us today to look back at President Biden's first year in office. Coming up after the news, the Biden administration is considering new policies for digital currencies. We'll explore the possibility of a U.S. digital dollar and how it might work. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to a barbershop owner trying to make students of color feel more comfortable on two Green Bay area college campuses. Now, the Federal Reserve is weighing the possibility of issuing an official digital U.S. currency. The Reserve put out an analysis last week that talked about the potential benefits and the risks involved with creating a digital dollar as cryptocurrencies start to become more and more mainstream. The Biden administration is also working on possible changes in federal policy over online assets, including these cryptocurrencies. Learning more about what exactly a digital dollar would be, how it would function, and where the world of cryptocurrency might go from here. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you confused about what cryptocurrencies are or how they work? I promise you, you are not alone. What questions do you have? Do you own any cryptocurrencies? Can you tell us what you bought, why you bought it? Would you feel more comfortable using these things if they were backed by the federal government? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Allison Versprill is a reporter for Bloomberg News who covers cryptocurrency and regulation. Allie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Can you talk about why the Federal Reserve is looking at getting into the cryptocurrency market?
Sure. So as they lay out in the report that they released last week, there are a lot of potential benefits to having a U.S. sort of digital dollar. One of those is that you would have potentially cheaper, faster payments. That would include if you're making payments, you know, from the U.S. to other countries. They've also said that, you know, having a digital dollar in the U.S. could help sort of maintain the dollar's dominance on the global scale. You know, we've seen other countries, specifically China, moving forward with their own digital currency. And so, you know, all of that goes into the process of trying to come up to, with this decision.
Let's talk about the basics here. What would a digital dollar be? What would that mean as opposed to, you know, I can pay online with my credit card or something like that?
So it's a good question. It's actually one that I have asked as well, because I, you know, getting into this, it was one of the main things I wanted to know. And the way it was explained to me by you know, someone that works at a crypto firm was currently, if you're paying with, say, a credit card or some other online means of payment, there's typically a lag time. I know all of us have probably had those moments where we go and buy something and, or you're transferring money to someone on a application like Venmo, and it takes a little while to show up in your bank account. The main difference that I've been told is that this would now be immediate. You would have much faster transactions. You could potentially avoid some of the costs associated with the ways you currently transact. And so those are all some of the potential benefits.
What did this paper say about the benefits and risks of the U.S. doing this, of creating this U.S. central bank digital currency?
So like I said, you know, the big one was cheaper, faster payments. Mm-hmm. They also talked a lot about the potential for more financial inclusion, bringing more folks who are currently unbanked into the financial system. And, you know, some of the ways that the Fed talked about that was maybe having using a central bank digital currency to collect taxes, or maybe even to deliver, you know, benefit payments directly to citizens. And then that could potentially happen, you know, at a quicker pace. Some of the risks, you know, the main ones are really that they're concerned about financial stability and, you know, the impacts that this would have on the current system. One of the points that they raised was that it could reduce the total amount of deposits in the banking system. It could result on, you know, runs on financial firms, you know, people taking their money out if they can more easily sort of convert other forms of money into the central bank digital currencies. They also raised, you know, consumer privacy and the need to balance, you know, folks' privacy with also the need to have some transparency into these transactions to be able to deter criminal activity, you know, think money laundering or terrorism finance.
Part of the story here is that a bunch of other countries are doing it. Where have we seen around the world other countries do their own version of a central bank digital currency?
You know, China is really the big one and the one that you hear talked most about in the U.S. And, you know, we're expecting that to sort of be featured at the Winter Olympics. So I guess stay tuned to see if that happens. You know, you're also seeing other countries look into this. And the U.S. has talked about this as being a potential, you know, reason for them to move forward. You know, obviously they want to maintain the dominance that the U.S. dollar currently has. And I think the one thing is that we still don't have a sense of timing. If the Fed in this paper said this was really only a first step, they just want to start a discussion and that they currently aren't taking a position one way or another if they're actually going to move forward.
We're talking to Allison Verspril, reporter for Bloomberg News, who covers cryptocurrency, looking at the idea of a U.S.-backed digital dollar, a U.S., an official version of, you know, the Bitcoins and the other things out there. Also, we're going to talk about calls for more regulation of the existing cryptocurrency market. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions, maybe your experiences if you've dabbled lightly or heavily in the world of these alternative currencies. 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Zach is with us in Madison. Zach, hi.
Hi there. Is this Rob?
This is Rob. Yeah, go for it, Zach. What did you want to say on the air?
Rob, I know every president since Joe Biden, all the way back to Nixon, we're basically living on a fiat currency. So it's all this cash is fake. There's nothing backed up by a gold standard. And someday, somehow, somewhere, we're all going to have to pay for it. And it's just crazy. It's like the United States government has a printing press, and they think they're just going to keep printing all this cash.
Zach, thanks for the call. Zach, talking about our existing money, but Allison, what would a digital currency be backed by, if anything, or is it by data mining like the Bitcoins? What would be the source of these digital dollars?
So, for, you know, the whole point of a central bank digital currency is that it would actually be backed by the Fed, and, you know, they tout this as a potential positive because right now we have, you know, these other types of coins out there. We have stable coins, which private companies will issue, and they're supposed to be, you know, pegged to the U.S. dollar or other fiat currency so that you could exchange them out one for one for normal currency. But there's been concern raised by lawmakers that these companies aren't keeping enough in reserve. And so, you know, the government has said that if they were to move forward with a central bank digital currency, that, or digital dollar, if you will, that that would help some of those potential, address some of those potential concerns.
Thanks for that call, Zach, at 800-642-1234. While this is going on, Allie, you've also been covering calls from some in Congress, maybe some talks within the Biden administration about how we regulate these existing current cryptocurrencies. There are lots of them. I think Bitcoin is the most famous. What kind of talk is there out there now?
So there's a lot of talk, a lot of different industry or different agencies that are trying to, you know, figure out how to regulate the space. Currently, the White House, and we reported this at the end of last week, but the White House is working on an executive order that would essentially, you know, provide some guidance to agencies, direct them to write reports on, you know, different either benefits or risks, including the potential risk for illicit finance or the effects that these digital assets have on, you know, financial stability. So we're going to see potentially some direction from the White House on that. You know, elsewhere, we're seeing a lot of action. Currently, the Treasury Department is working on some rules that would require, you know, companies that sort of facilitate cryptocurrency transactions to report user data to the IRS. That was passed in a law last year in the big infrastructure package. And essentially what the government has said is that that would allow them to get some transparency into these transactions to, you know, make sure that people are actually paying the taxes that they owe. So that's something that's also on the horizon that we're keeping an eye on.
These are volatile products, a lot of these cryptocurrencies, and we just saw over the last week big drops in their value. Is part of the story here that there is talk of maybe more regulation of people not being able to do the things with these coins that they might have expected to be able to do?
You know, I will say volatility is one of the things that gets brought up most by lawmakers and the government. You know, they worry about how that affects the financial system. And like you said, we have seen some pretty big drops in the market over the last several days. You know, it's about 50% from a record high in November. So that's been discussed a lot in this Federal Reserve report and also in past analyses by the government. You know, how do you address that? How do you make sure that consumers are protected? So a lot of that is being talked about as they work on regulations or as Congress works on legislation on the Hill.
We're talking with Bloomberg News reporter Allie Verspril about the prospects for a U.S. digital dollar, a digital currency like Bitcoin, but backed by the U.S. government. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like the idea of a digital dollar? Do you not fully understand it? Again, if so, you are not alone. Join in at 800-642-1234. And in the existing world of cryptocurrencies, have you personally taken the plunge and bought some of these things, used them to buy things? Which ones? What led you into it? Do you like the idea? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Allie Verspril. She's a reporter for Bloomberg News with us today talking about cryptocurrency and the potential for a digital U.S. dollar. The Federal Reserve looking at that idea. Not a done deal yet. No timeline to get it. At this point, you could join in, though, at 800-642-1234. Do you feel secure making digital transactions now? Do you want more regulation or protections in federal policy? Would you feel more secure buying and selling digital dollars compared to the current system, the different products, the bitcoins and whatnot on the market? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now with Mike in Rusk County. Mike, hi.
Hi. I hate the idea. I never did see the point. And I'm digitally literate. work in the IT space. I'm not some old fuddy-duddy out here. But I will tell you, when it comes to this particular idea, I am an old fuddy-duddy. We have a well-seasoned financial system. It's based on a certain idea, and to go in there and completely do an upheaval and replace it all, report what I consider to be a gimmick, that we don't know all the where's and what for's of it. I think it's awfully dangerous place to go or even consider. And I haven't seen a good, I missed the earlier part of the show, but I have not seen a good case for what our benefits are going to be. Everything you could do with digital money, you can do with digital or virtual dollars.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Ali, that's part of why the Federal Reserve isn't going full speed ahead on it. There are concerns that that people share with Mike.
Yes, and I think, you know, there are folks that are sharing concerns. The government has talked about some of its potential concerns. It's one of the reasons that they have said that this is really just a first step. They want to examine all of the risks and benefits. They've opened this comment period up to the public where people can actually submit their comments, provide their thoughts on risk or benefits. And those are all due by May 20th. And I will say, you know, we're expecting to see a lot more research on this as well. I know the Boston Fed is actually working on a report about the technology that could run a digital dollar. And so we're expecting that as soon as next month. I think the Fed has laid it out. They think there are some potential benefits. They think there are some potential risks, and they really just haven't come to a decision yet. And so they're still evaluating all of that.
Mike, thanks for the call. And Mike used the word replace, Ali. And I think it's clear there's not talk of getting rid of our current dollars and cents to replace them with America coin or whatever it ends up being called. This would be in addition to. Do I have that right?
Yes. So the Fed in their report has stressed that this is not a replacement to the, you know, the current paper currency that we have. They want these things to work in tandem. They want them to work even with some of the products that are being offered by the private sector. So they're hoping that these things can sort of live in harmony, not replace each other.
Thanks again for that call. We'll go next to Rusty in Wauwatosa. Rusty, hi.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. You know, I've worked in the securities area, and here's the problem. It's not backed by anything. It's like saying, Rob saying, hey, I'm going to sell some Rob coins. You know, you've got PayPal and everything, but it's backed up by money that's somewhere in a bank or an account. But, you know, I think if we go down this road, more and more companies are going to start promoting, all kinds of coin, electronic coin, but it's not backed by anything. It's just fictitious. And, yeah, some people have made millions of dollars, but a lot of people have lost millions of dollars, too. It's way too dangerous. If the government backs it, you know, somehow with real backing, I don't see a problem with that. But I just think there's too much danger here to go down this route.
Rusty, thanks a lot for the call. I think there is a Rob coin on the market, so they're out ahead of me. I can't start my own Rob coin. Also, Ferret coin is taken. But Ali, this is a concern a lot of people have that, I don't know, these digital currencies are maybe a consensual hallucination. I don't know. What do you think of what Rusty had to say?
So I'll stress that there are, you know, differences between what, you know, between what's out there currently. So there are normal cryptocurrencies, as you kind of think of them, you know, Bitcoin, you have Ether. There are also these stable coins, which are also issued by private companies. And as I mentioned before, those are supposed to be pegged to the US dollar or another fiat currency that's supposed to keep them more stable. Like I said, there has been talk of regulating those stablecoin issuers so that they have to be more like banks and, you know, have to show that they have enough in reserves to actually back these stablecoins. So that's something that's being talked about a lot right now on both the Hill and both in Congress, within the executive branch. And then, you know, we have these potential central bank digital currencies, which would be backed by the Federal Reserve. There are a couple different things that are happening right now, and I don't want them to get confused. And that's all being discussed. You know, Congress and the White House are trying to do their best to, you know, figure out the path forward here.
Thanks again for that call, Rusty. We're talking to Ali Verspirl from Bloomberg News. She writes about cryptocurrency. We're talking about the idea of a U.S.-backed digital coin and other related issues to regulation and more. We'll go back to your calls now. Audi is with us in Green Bay. Audi, hi.
Hi. I'd just like to say that, you know, of course they want to take away Bitcoin from the people because it's something they don't have control over. And they've managed to put us into outrageous debt and outrageous inflation due to the incompetence of politicians and various others. I mine Bitcoin and I love it. And it's just, it's great and it's revolutionary. And you can't be putting your thumb down on this technology just because you're afraid of volatility. Volatility will subside once it becomes more mainstream, and they're just afraid of it because they want to take it and blow it up and take the power away from the retail investor. All right, I'm going.
Thanks a lot for sharing that, Ali. This Audi, clearly a core customer for alternative currencies and very skeptical, it sounds like, of the idea of working with a U.S.-backed cryptocurrency. It would defeat the point. Is that, I don't know, is that going to make it hard to sell to the community that currently uses this stuff?
You know, that's not something that we've really addressed yet in our reporting. But, you know, there are definitely proponents of the traditional cryptocurrencies. And, you know, they believe and have talked about the benefits that they see from those. And then there are also these proponents of the central bank digital currencies. And I've seen some overlap, you know, of analysts that are talking about both. And again, you know, like we talked about earlier, I think the idea is that they're hoping that these are, you know, two kind of separate things that may be able to exist with each other. And that's what the Federal Reserve test talked about. It's talked about not having the central bank digital currency, you know, being a replacement for paper currency. And, you know, in the past, Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, has talked about other types of digital assets like stablecoins being able to exist alongside a central bank digital currency. So I think the thought here is that they're trying to determine how they can continue to promote innovation while still regulating the space, and then, you know, continuing to see what the government can actually do on its end to ensure that it remains, you know, a dominant player in the financial system, global financial system.
And Audi also mentioned hopes that things like Bitcoin would become more mainstream. And I definitely wanted to ask you about that, Ali. This used to be, you know, some high-tech people, maybe a certain criminal market, people skeptical of governments. It seems less fringe now, and it's getting more mainstream. How much is it, though?
You know, we've definitely seen it becoming a bit more mainstream. We've seen more people joining and investing, and you see that with the prices going up. And it's also a reason, you know, the government has talked about this, and it's a reason why they're now trying to sort of get ahead of it. You know, if they feel like digital currency is here to stay, then they want to be able to get a handle on it and they want to be able to regulate it. And so that's why you now see, you know, the White House stepping in and wanting to take a central role as well. So it's definitely something that's catching people's attention. It's no longer sort of sitting on the fringes and the government's just going to let it slide. So they're looking at ways to regulate it.
In just our last few moments, Ali, it's clear from our conversation, you've got a busy beat to cover. What are you watching for next in the world of cryptocurrencies?
So, you know, we're watching a lot of things. We're trying to see if Congress is going to pass legislation. You know, Democrats even on their own had difficulties passing this big social spending bill that they were looking at the end of last year. So I think the big question remains to be seen is, can Democrats and Republicans agree on legislation this year? We know there's been some interest from both sides on stable coins, for instance. Like I said, that's been a really top focus because a lot of them would like issuers to be regulated more like banks. So we're keeping an eye on that. I'm keeping an eye on, you know, any regulation we see coming out of these agencies, in particular, the rules that are going to be coming from the Treasury Department on the reporting requirements for certain types of brokers. And I think, too, you know, I mentioned that the Federal Reserve didn't offer any sort of timing on a central bank digital currency. But I will note that Bank of America strategists today in a research note said that they think a U.S. digital dollar is inevitable, and they were predicting issuance happening sometime between 2025 and 2030. So
a lot to watch for. Thanks to our guest, Ali Verspril from Bloomberg News, looking at cryptocurrency and the idea of a U.S. digital coin. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, get some advice on care and maintenance of your teeth from a dentist. That's tomorrow on the Ideas Network. An archaeological find has been baffling researchers for over a century, but there may be an answer at last. And the answer is beer. As reported in the Washington Post, back in 1897, researchers at a site in Russia found a collection of silver and gold metal tubes about 3.5 feet long, about 5,500 years old. What were they used for? Were they symbolic scepters, tent poles for some kind of funeral ritual? No solid answer. But now, a researcher took a closer look and found that these tubes look like bronze drinking tubes used in the same era. They tested for residue. At least one of them showed signs of barley. So the new theory, the mysterious tubes may have been big, long straws that people had used to drink out of a big pot of beer they were sharing. No prehistoric evidence of a bronze TV so they could watch some Bronze Age football while they shared that big pot of beer. Party on, prehistoric humans. This is Central Time.